This is David Hausman, and I'm here at the Department of Home Affairs Central Processing Facility in Pretoria, South Africa, on February 24th, 2010, with Ms. Yogi Travern, the Director for Identity Documents here at the Department of Home Affairs. Ms. Travern, have you agreed to be recorded for this interview?
Yes, I have.
Great. I wanted to start by asking you about your background and career and the jobs that brought you to this position.
Oh, I started in Home Affairs straight out of college. That was in 1989. And my first job in Home Affairs was just a clerk with assisting applicants taking ID applications. I've had a total of 21 years service in the department, so I've been here like forever. I started at more the local offices, working at the front office that actually deals with members of the public first. And I've worked there for almost 10 years and then moved up to Pretoria in 2000. And I've been in Pretoria now since. I've moved through various stages in Home Affairs before I became the Acting Director of ID Documents. I've worked in the permanent residence, the temporary residence. I've worked with citizenship. I've worked with passports. And the position I'm holding now, I've started in June 2007. That was when the turnaround team arrived here in Home Affairs, and we started with the turnaround project, which was initiated by the then Minister of Home Affairs. And I'm not sure how I got chosen for this position, because I wasn't actually working directly with IDs, but I hear rumors that they said no, she would probably manage in that post. So I was then transferred here to actually oversee the transformation of the actually ID processes itself.
Great. So I wonder if you could describe how the ID process worked at the time and what some of the issues and challenges facing it were.
Okay. Previously, the ID process was, you would find the applicant would go to an outside office, he would submit an application, it would come through the process. We then used South African Post Office to actually send the documentation through to us. And being not such a secure service as such, you'd find that there would be delays of between 3 to 4 weeks before the applications arrived here for processing. That actually extended the turnaround time even more. And you'll also find that because it wasn't a secure services, you'll find bags being lost with ID applications. That would eventually come to us here in this building. Previously, we had a postal receipt. It was just one section that dealt with the receiving of post. They would receive the post, open the bags, and just dispatch the work to the harness facility. We have the harness facility here, which is your Home Affairs identification system, where they actually do the verification of the fingerprints before the ID book is issued.
What does HANAS actually stand for?
Home Affairs Identification System. Okay, so they would do the verification of the fingerprints, and after that verification, it would come into a data section that actually populates the National Population Register, and the ID book is issued. Now, that entire process, after it's been issued, we have two outside service providers, which is CETA, the State's Information Technology Agency. They do the actual printing of the ID books for us. We then have GPW, which is called the Government Printing Works. They physically do the binding of the ID book, and that ID book is then sent back to us for quality checks, and thereafter the ID book is dispatched to the outside office. I'm not sure if you've seen the video. You'd seen they showed you the very manual process that they were using when they received and dispatched the books as well. So that was basically the process. The turnaround times at that time was anything between 127 to 130 days for an ID book to be issued, because it was a very long, mundane, dragged out process. And that's where we started in 2007, in June 2007.
And why did it take so long, apart from the postal service?
Processes were not right. You had too many handovers. You'd have in one room the application going between 5 to 7 desks before it left that room. So the processes were not right. There was no controls. There was no accountability. There was no responsibility. So if I sat with an application for 10 days on my desk, nobody knocked at my desk and said, what are you doing with this so long? It was just taken for granted that I would sit with it for a long period. I chose to sit with it. And on a maybe smaller scale, lack of staff, lack of proper systems. We didn't have a track and trace system that would say that this application is here too long, it should not be here too long. Or there were no turnaround times, no measurement of times to say that, why are you guys taking so long? Or is there a system that can tell me that I've been sitting with an application for whatever period of time?
And so was there an effort at before the turnaround started to sit down and plan how the changes would take place?
With the turnaround team or separate from the turnaround team?
Both, I guess.
Both. Okay. Previous, before the turnaround team came on board, I guess the managers tried their best in terms of seeing how can we improve the times. But, you know, if you're coming from an old mindset of thinking is that we've done everything, there's nothing more that we can do. So that probably was one of the factors that impacted them thinking beyond or thinking out of the box. Because they felt at that time, you know what, we've done everything. We can't get more resources. We can't improve our computer systems because we have an IT that's failing us. So why even bother even making any efforts? And let's just do what we can. And as long as the guy gets his book, even if he gets it after 6 months, he gets his book. And then when the turnaround team came between April and June, we actually documented the as-is process.
That was April and June 2007.
Yeah, 2007.
So before you actually took this position.
Long before.
Were you already involved in the turnaround team?
But not sitting in the building. I was involved, but sitting in the in the Watlow building. So all I did was attend meetings and look at process documentation and things like that, but didn't physically come into. So between April and June, there was a team in the building that just did a walkthrough to say, let's just see visually. What are these guys doing? So they took a 3 month, April, May, June, because they had 2 months, to actually do the visual. So they walked into sections, they sat and did observation. Then I came into this building in June 2007. And then we got a team of about 7 people together. We actually took people from outside offices. We brought in 4 people from outside offices that had that front office experience.
Who were those people?
There was, do you want the names?
Sure.
I said, there was a Rihanna. She was actually from our Fred office, and we had a Miss Mapule. She was from Limpopo, and we had a Nozi. She was from Eastern Cape, and we had another gentleman. I forget his name, but we used to call him CJ. He was also from one of our provinces. So we took 4 from different provinces, and we made them. We actually relocated them to head office for 6 months, so between June and December 2007. Then it was myself. And we had 4 turnaround team members. So we formed a group of about, a total of about 10.
And who were the 4 turnaround team members?
It was Abel Da Fonseca, he was one. We had Linton Lovell, he was the other one. Then we had Joshua Mumau, and we had Andrew Pierce.
And were these all consultants?
All consultants. And the consultant lead was Adias Nkube. He was the one that was a consultant lead. But the 4 gentlemen, I gave you their names, they were the ones that were hands-on that were involved. I was the home affairs team lead. So I would oversee the home affairs team, and then we had Adias overseeing the consultants. So in June 2007, we actually all took occupation in this building. We secured ourselves our offices on the 5th floor. And what happened was we said, let's document the as-is process. Physically document what are these guys doing. And then we started with from the, not so much the outside office, but we took the process from the time the outside office had started to use a dispatch service. That means the client has already been in the office, submitted the application, and from the time they had prepared the application to send it through to us. So that's where we started documenting to say, what are you guys actually doing now? So detail of that was that we sat with each section, we monitored what they did, we documented what they did, and then we could visually see that there were these loopholes and there were these over duplication of work, this duplication of handover. Simultaneous in 2007, the department also introduced a track and trace system. So that track and trace system, with us looking at the physical process, tied hand in hand. So they actually started rolling out the track and trace at the beginning of 2007. So the track and trace, basically, very briefly, they said each application, we've got barcodes on our ID application. So they would track in a barcode at the outside office, and then you could follow a barcode from beginning to end and see exactly how the process went through. So while that was being rolled out at the outside offices, we were actually looking at the process itself and see how do we improve the process. It's good to have a track and trace, but if the guy still took 10 days at an outside office, that was still a problem for us. So the first thing we've done was we implemented a quality checklist for the outside office to say that before you guys actually dispatch the ID application, you need to check, does the application meet these 15 requirements? Does it have a stamp? Does it have a signature? Does it have a fingerprint? Is the form correctly completed? Have you tracked it in on track and trace? And things like that. So we've done that initial. So that actually brought that awareness to outside offices. Now I can't send work that's not of good quality. I have to now double check. And we actually also implemented a control sheet for them to say, after you've done your checklist, on every batch of applications, you put a control sheet with a list of ID numbers. But what used to happen, because we didn't have that, you'd find fraud applications being sent to head office and being processed with nobody's knowledge that it's actually a fraud application. Because there was no track and trace and no one checking, so I can slip in a fraudulent application in between and nobody would pick it up. But with the control list, it forced you to document that fraudulent application if you took a chance and sent it through. So there was a control sheet on batch of every, whether it was 25 or 50 ID applications. So that's the initial step that already brought that kind of awareness at the outside offices, both on the quality and what am I sending to head office. Simultaneous to that, what we did was South African Post Office Services. In South Africa, you'd find that it's our major server that delivers post for us. But there was no security attached to it. That means if they lost a bag, they lost a bag. But they never looked at the consequence of losing a bag of 50 ID applications. The delays with them was that if they never had a driver to deliver to me, the applications would sit with them for 3 to 4 days. So that created a lot of problems for us. So then we engaged with a service provider, XPS. Now that's one of our speed services in South Africa, the courier service in South Africa. So we engaged with them, and with approval from the minister then and the DG then, we were asked to actually go into a contract with XPS. And the good thing with XPS is their footprint was excellent. They covered almost each and every office of mine. So it wasn't a problem visiting my office. We actually then specified in our SLA with them to say, you guys would go there 5 times a week. You would pick up my applications from the outside office and you will deliver to me. We also gave them a time frame to say that you need to deliver within 3 days. It's only the far remote areas I gave you 5 days. But any area that had a certain radius, within 3 days you must deliver. So that guaranteed that I would receive the application within 3 days. So that cut off at least about 3 weeks of our time, of that wastage time. So that made a huge impact on just the front office, us receiving it here. Changing the service provider and putting in conditions on the service level agreement to say, this is how many times you'll go, this is when you will give me back the applications, and this is what's going to be done. So that's just covering the first part, which is the outside office. Then we...
Sorry. Can I ask you quickly?
Yeah, sure.
Was there resistance from the outside offices to the introduction of control sheets and check quality checklists?
Not resistance in the way that I won't do it, but resistance in the way it's too much work. Because previously I would just pop it in an envelope and send it to post office, whether it was delivered or not wasn't my concern. But now we gave them a little bit more work to do. So that was the only resistance. But over time, and what we did is when we introduced that, we actually went and held workshops with them. So we went to each province. We actually called each province together and said to them, you know what, we're coming on this day, we want to introduce a new system to you, we want a whole workshop, we want to show you. So I think after the workshop and the communication and the education, educating them, the reason why we're doing it, they eventually bought in very quickly to say, you know what, guys, we also need to play our role. If Pretoria is changing and doing things better, we also need to play the role in doing things better.
And when did these changes happen?
We already started by October 2007. The checklists were already out at offices. Training was already done. Workshops were already in. By the end of 2007, they were already starting to do the work how we wanted it. Okay, you will never get 100% compliance because of the human factor, but they had already bought into the changes at the front office. So by the end of December 2007, they were already starting to send us work the way we wanted to send it, but at 100%.
Great. So let me ask you to go on now to the other parts of the process.
Right. Then remember, now we're using XPS. So XPS now comes and delivers the bags to us. But then we had to look at what's happening here. The old postal receipt was bags just being dumped on the floor, opened the bags. You had about 65 staff that now separated the work into various categories and now started saying, okay, fine, now we've got to send it. But at that point, postal receipt was sitting in my directorate ID documents. So then a very simple picture was that the bag will be delivered to me. I open, sort, I then send it to the other directorate, and I tell them, now you verify the fingers, do whatever you need to do. Then after they've done their job, it comes back to me, and then I now then will issue the book, dispatch the book, then I would send the form back to the other. So we had that backward and movement, which is actually a waste of time. So what we did was we moved postal receipt to the other directorate to cut the process into two clear defined process to say, you guys will receive, document, verify the fingers, then you would send it to me, I would populate NPR, issue the book and dispatch the book.
And what's the other directorate?
Identification.
Is that Hannes?
That's Hannes. That's the identification where they physically do the verification. So we moved postal receipt there. That's to make the process more streamlined instead of having the backward and forward of application. And that's what happened was that with the backward and forward of applications, a lot got lost, misplaced, delayed unnecessarily. With moving the postal receipt to that directorate, there's another thing that we did. We said our problem was, you know, a top management always wants to know how is this province doing in comparison to another province. And we never had that eye on what the provincial was doing on a provincial level. It was just a big ball that we looked at. So what we did was, okay, let's divide the postal receipt into our 9 provinces. We then split the postal receipt into 9 provinces. At the same time, what we did, when we implemented at the outset office the checklist and XPS, we also made them actually on the envelope they were sending, they would indicate which province to me. They will say this is coming from KZN. So on the envelope, they will write a big KZN when they gave it to XPS. So then the postal receipt downstairs was separated into 9 provinces, each province sitting with about between 6 to 8 staff. We gave the bigger provinces more staff because of the volume of applications being received. So now when the envelopes came in, you have about 7 different people that physically open the XPS bag. So after they've opened the XPS bag, inside that bag is an envelope that says KZN. Then they would then send that work to the KZN team. So the KZN team now, their job was to open that envelope, see does it meet the requirements, put it on track and trace that it's been received. And we also introduced something that's a quality check. So say what KZN would do, as an example, after they had opened the envelope, they will do the first check. Is there a quality list? Yes. Does the number of applications on the list match the number of applications attached? Then they would, after that, they would say, okay, fine, it matches. Then is it on track and trace? Because outside office had to use track and trace. The way the track and trace is designed, I cannot perform a function if the outside office did not perform their function. So there was that link to say that if you didn't perform, then I'm stuck. I can't do the next function. So, but we found the challenge with that was that the outside offices a lot of times forgot to do their work. But now, not to disadvantage the client, because it meant I must send the application back to say, do your job, you haven't done it. We created a mini front office team, as you would call it. So we actually put in 4 people, and we said, you guys, we're giving you all the front office functions. And should we ever pick up an envelope that the front office forgot to do their work, they would do it on behalf of the outside office just to avoid sending the application back and disadvantaging the client.
What are some examples of the front office tasks then?
The front office, like they've got four track and trace functions they must perform before sending it to us, which is received at outside office, all right, fingerprints taken at outside office, and dispatch from outside office to head office. Now, if they never perform any of those three functions on track and trace, I can't perform the fourth function, which is receive application at head office. So we created that team just to assist, to say without having to send the application all the way back, I would do perform those three functions on their behalf, but with their office name. So we had actually created the track and trace function here with a specific office name.
So for example, with fingerprints, there would be fingerprints on the application, but they wouldn't have been registered in track and trace. Is
so
that right?
I would register it here on behalf of them. And the ones that I have to send back if there's no photographs attached to the application, if no fingerprints are taken, or the fingerprints are really bad that Hannes can't even verify them, those will have to unfortunately go back to the outside office asking the client to come back in. So then we created that section just to assist the outside office and assist the client basically. All right, must I continue?
Yeah, that's great.
All right, then the division of the nine provinces, you understand that, and then the applications will go to the nine provinces, and then we also provided a quality report after a week. So what we would do is we had a quality report to say, what was the problems I'm experiencing with KZN? Are the track and trace a problem? Is it the quality of the applications a problem, a photograph? From that quality report, once a week on a Thursday, we would send that report back to all the office heads in KZN and say, please take note. If your name, we would actually put the office name. It'll be the province KZN, and if KZN has 100 offices, the 100 office names would be underneath, and each problem with each office would be detailed to say you had, from Scottsboro office, you sent us 500 applications. From your 500, 50 had track and trace issues, 20 the fingerprints were very poor, 10, this was a problem. 5, this was a problem. So it was them more to do a refresher training with their front office clerks to say, you know what, guys, this is what's happening. So the whole of 2008, the quality reports were being sent back on a regular basis to them to say, guys, take note of one. And you'd find the first 6 months, the reports were really bad. So the offices could see that their work was really, really bad. But over the latter part of 2008 and 9, there's been a huge improvement. So in terms of the work. So that was the postal receipt task to say that this is what you guys need to do. Then maybe I must just highlight the fact that Hannes does various tasks. You'd have a person who's never applied for an ID before, who's applying for the very first time. That means his fingerprints are not on the system for me to do a verification. But what I do a search. That means I search the database to say, did this guy at any other time under a different name and number apply for an ID? So he does a search, and the search takes about 3 days. They would do the search. The search will come back and say to me, no, nothing found. And if there's nothing found, the old system was the application would go for an ID book to be issued. After the book is issued in dispatch, the application will come back into Hannes and say, now capture his fingerprints. But it was a back end, because in that interim period, if that guy wanted a passport, I couldn't give him one because his fingerprints were not on Hannes. Because all Hannes did was only check, they did not load. So that was creating a problem. So we then changed that process. We said, no. After you've done the check and you said that this guy didn't apply on any other number previously, and you're satisfied that this is the first time he's coming, you now capture. So we changed the process to capture his fingerprints immediately. When we came on board in June last year in that particular environment, they had over 200,000 backlog where the ID book is already sitting with the client, but his fingerprints are not on Hannes. So it was a huge problem because he would do any activity in terms of passport and travel, but his fingerprints were nowhere on the system. So then fraud is another huge aspect, because somebody else could have stolen his number and come into the system and we would not know. because we would give the person another book because we never had his fingerprints, he's never captured. So that was a very good thing that we actually implemented as a turnaround team to say, you know what, there'll be no more issuing of ID books if the fingerprints have not been captured on the system. So that's a change that we didn't harness. So now when the application went from the 9 provinces, if it was a first-time applicant, they would do the search, they would capture the fingers and then send the book for issuing. That was a change we did. Then for the reissue person who's just lost his book and he just wants another book, it would go through the system, they would do the verification, they say, yes, it is Yogi on the system, they would say that is fine, everything, then they would, the application would go for an issue. That entire environment, what needed to do is, we needed to change the way the work flowed. Because you'd find that the machines are on this end, they would receive the work on that end, it would go through 5 different hands before it got to the machine. And then coming out of the machine, it's 5 different hands before it was dispatched. So we had to just streamline the process, say, you know what, there's an entry point and there's an exit point. And you enter at the point where you want to use it. Because what used to happen, I used to receive it. So there's 3 people receiving. Then it will move to another 3 people who's tracking it in on track and trace. Move to another 3 people that was actually doing the sorting. And then move to the machine. But we said, what is the purpose of these 3 people in between the first and the third group? You can actually remove them and say, you know what, you track and trace, you receive. That means when you get it, you just check. If it's fine, you track it in, you pass it to the guys who needs to scan. So we actually had to remove certain steps in the process to streamline and make it shorter. That saved us more than 10 days in that environment itself. Because you'd find that if it's 3 people checking, if 2 were off sick or on leave or 1 was on leave, that work would pile up for 3 days on that desk, not going through. But by having streamlined the process, removing some of the staff in certain areas and giving more staff to track and trace, okay, instead of having 6 people, we can have 6 people, you track and trace. That means everything received today has to be tracked in today and has to move to the next section by the end of the day.
And did you keep all the same people in the same section?
Yes, just we did. Them? We just moved them around. If there was a training that had to be done, we gave them the training. But the good part in the harness environment is that all of them were fingerprint experts. So it's just a matter of them doing different functions, but they all had common knowledge of what needed to be done in that harness environment. So that was a streamlining that we've done there. And in that 6-month period, by the end of December, I would say by January 2008, we had got rid of that backlog simultaneously. So what we did was we changed the process, streamlined it to flow this way. At the same time, we had a group working on the 200,000 backlog and say, guys, let's work on that. So by the time that team left the harness environment, we had the new process flowing and no backlog. It took them between 6 to 9 months to eventually get everything running smoothly in that environment. That saved us 10 days in the time. So we've saved about 3 weeks in the postage. We've saved in the actual postal receipt section maybe another week, and then in the harness environment we saved another 10 to 12 days there. So already we had saved more than 30 to 35 days from the 127 days in time, which is not major IT changes or new programs or system. It's also changing the way people think. I'm used to working in this way, and you know, if you walk through the building, we've got people that have been here like forever. So, and to get that mindset changed to say, you know what, we need to change the way we work. It was difficult, but that was the main challenge. I'm so used to doing it like this, and I'm comfortable doing it like this. Why must I change?
And how did you manage to change that mindset? Because that's a problem in many civil service reform efforts, and many of them fail to do it. So why did it work here, do you think?
I think it worked more was, previously, we've had other turnaround projects. And it was a consultant coming into the building and dictating to me what I should do from their experience. You'll find consultants have been through 100 companies and they want to kind of bring that in, just say, you know what, this will work. But the difference with the team with us was that we had DHA and consultants part of the same team. So it wasn't a consultant telling you it's going to work. It was your own colleague telling you. So what we did is when we went to an environment like postal receipt, we took the manager, we took 2 of their supervisors and the clerks, and they became the team that was designing the process. So it wasn't Yogi and a consultant designing your process for you. It was sitting with you and saying to you, you know what, you've been doing it like this, but we We've seen the way you're doing it. We say remove these two steps and you'll still be able to achieve the same thing you've been achieving, but in a shorter period of time. And that kind of worked, the same in the harness environment. We actually took, we created little teams ourselves. We said, okay, you guys are the machine operators. So we see how you're doing it. So we said, okay, what if you turn that paper over? You're working with the paper this way. Just turn it over, try it for 2 days. And see how it works. So because you got them involved and you got them practically doing it themselves, they thought they were actually, in their mind is, I'm actually improving the way I work. It's not someone telling me how to improve. So that kind of helped, and that actually brought the mindset to say, you know what, let's work with. And I think the good thing is, even with the consultants as well, you know, we had lots of meetings with them as well to say, you know what, when you go in the environment, you go like you don't know nothing. You want them to tell you. Because if you go there with this, because you must know, when you look at consultants, it's a suit and a tie. They're coming from an outside environment. They've got all this knowledge and experience, and they all got laptops in their hands. They look like executives walking in the building. And if you look at a government, a civil servant, he doesn't even know what a laptop looks like. He hasn't even touched a laptop. He's touched the whole ProLine computer. Or he hasn't even know how to work a mouse. So that kind of was an intimidating factor when you walk in. I mean, if a guy walks in here, all automatically, I might not look intimate, but inside I'm saying, okay, I'm young, you've got to act professional. This guy is here and things like that, you understand? So that was helped a lot because the consultants were excellent. They really were. The team that gave, I think it was actually God-given team to us because everyone else in the department struggled a lot with the consultants they had. But the ones we had, down to earth, they sat with the staff, no matter what your rank was. If it was just a clerk, they would sit with the clerk and say, you know what, tell me what you're doing. Let's sit together. What can you... And you know what, we also use the clerks because over years, you have 20 staff. And the 20 staff have learned the way they work. And over year, over time, they also have ideas. But because they didn't have a manager that thought beyond the out of the box, they couldn't actually bring their idea to the table. So they suppressed their ideas to say, I can do it better, but you know, this manager of mine, I don't think he will listen. He always wants to say to me how to do things. But the difference with the team was we said, you know what, you tell us how you think it's going to work. So we took what they said, built on it, and implemented it. So it made them feel like, you know what, it's my idea that they actually used. And that's how the buy-in came. And eventually everyone bought in. And history will tell you, if you ask anyone, this building before we came on board, very union dominated. That means if I didn't like the process or I didn't like something, I would run to my union. And then it would become a union issue. And then automatically the managers felt intimidated because unions were actually running the show. So what used to happen as a manager, instead of me implementing a new process, I'd rather say, just leave it. I don't want that confrontation with unions. And I don't want, and you'll, even if you speak to the turnaround team, the consultants, they'll tell you, a lot of environments when they walked in, the staff will tell them, you know what, before you do anything, you invite a union. So that's what we did. So whenever we had a process change, we say, unions, please join us in the process change meeting. We're thinking of changing this process. Is that going to impact the staff? In terms of time, in terms of their job, it might improve their skill, there might be a slight change. So the union actually started buying in as well. So we use the unions a lot to get that change happening in this place.
Do you think there's anything in your background that helped you to with this kind of inclusive process?
I'm a people's person. I think that actually played to my advantage. And coming from a Christian background, You always learn that you listen to the other person, you kind of, you talk, you don't instruct, you don't dictate, you don't have this attitude to say, this must be done. It's, I think that helped me a lot because being a people's person, I enjoy, even when I have my management meetings, if I sit in the meeting, it's basically, what can I do to help you? Tell me if there's something that you're struggling in your section that you can't get done, you got obstacles, if I can pull a string here, if I can do something. And I think that kind of helped because when I came in, it was, what is she doing in this building? She doesn't even know anything about IDs. Because remember, I wasn't coming from an ID background. I'm coming from a citizenship dealing with foreigner background. So I knew everything about dealing with foreigners, but I knew basically nothing about the ID process. So already it was, but why her? Why she's here? But when they got to see that I came down to their level to say, you know what? I don't know nothing. You teach me. And that kind of helped to say, I didn't come up on a high horse to say I know everything. I didn't know nothing about IDs. But the fact that we sat with the physical people doing the cutting and pasting of photographs and say, you guys are cutting and pasting. Isn't this manual? What are you guys doing? Sat with them, looked at what they were doing, understood what they were doing, and then said, right, how can we improve this? What can we do to help you? And I think that worked for me a lot. That worked a lot, working with the people. And I mean, over 2.5 years, they haven't moved me as yet. I'm still here, so.
Great, so let's go on to the next step in the process.
So then after the harness environment, we've changed that. Then the next environment is my data processing. Now, data processing, there's not much change that you can do there because it's 35 ladies that are data ladies, a typist. All they do is they get an application that's completed. That means it has been verified, it has been checked. They need to now go on to the National Population Register. In short term, we call it the NPR. And all they must do is now activate the ID book. So in terms of changes there was nothing. That section was already running like clockwork. So they don't have backlogs. There was no process that you can actually change because all that happened is it came through the section. It went through 35 ladies. It went out of the section. The only thing we put in there was the track and trace. Just to monitor the times, just to make sure that they were not doing unnecessarily too long. That means they were not taking a long period to actually issue the ID book. That was all that we did there in terms of change. We just put in operational management is what we've been implemented in the building, and that helped a lot. That means we've got the 7:15 meetings with management, where the manager actually sits with the staff and gets to know what happened yesterday? What were your challenges? Because you know that we've set norms and standards. That means you must reach a certain target per person per day. And if you did not reach that target, so that 7:15 meeting was more a review of the previous day to say that, guys, I can see from the statistics you've reached your norm, you've managed, but you did not manage. What was your challenges? Then you'd find that they would say, my PC was off for 2 hours, or I had to attend a meeting for an hour, or there was a union issue. So that operation management brought more light to the section itself to say, you know what, this is what we're actually doing in the section. So that helped. So then from the 7:15, then we had the other meeting, which is at 8:30, 9:00. That is when the management sits. That means you have an assistant director. You have an assistant director, and you have her senior admin officers, and you have a chief clerks. They sit as a management team on each floor. And they say, you know what, there was 1, 2, 3 problems in this section. Yeah, there were a few problems in the section, and the staff were saying that the computers were off. What have you done as a manager? Did you report the computer being down? The guy said, you know what, I didn't have stamps, so I didn't have this, I didn't have my material to work in. So they have a management meeting at 9:00. So that kind of helped a lot, because now an assistant director knew exactly what was happening on our floor. Previously, it was an isolation. I was in my office. Whatever happened on the floor, happened on the floor. Nobody even questioned me if application was sitting there for 3 days or for 5 days on my floor. So that ops management kind of brought the light to the section to say, this is what's happening. Then we've got, so in the data section, we didn't do much. We only implemented ops management to monitor what work they were doing and things like that. The two service providers are what data waits for, which is CETA, the State Information Technology, who does my printing of the book, and the GPW, who does the binding of the book. There we couldn't do much changes because CETA turnaround time was 1 day and GPW turnaround time was 3 days. So we didn't change anything there, but we did consult them in terms of errors, problems, delays, because you'd find that sometimes there would be a paper error, you'd find spots on the paper. So that was an ongoing consultation, but nothing was changed in terms of them. After the data section, we wait 3 days. The book then arrives in our building. When the book arrives in our building, it's actually a totally blank book. It's just got demographics on it. It's got nothing else in the book. So it's a book that comes with... Okay, it just comes just like this, but this is a scanned photo, but the previous, our current ID book has got the photo that's stuck on like that. All right, the book just comes like that to us, plain like that with no photo, just that book comes just raw like this. Then it goes to my section, which is called my completion section. Now, my completion section, what they actually do is they have the physical application, and they have the raw book. They now compare only the demographics. That means, does the name and ID numbers, do they match? That's the only thing they do. Then they then pass it to another set of ladies or staff that physically do the photograph match to say, yes, the photograph is here, the ID numbers match, and they physically cut out the photo to be make sure it's in size, paste it on the ID book, and then sends it to another team of staff that do the physical lamination. You can barely see it. This is a very old book. They physically do the lamination of the front page. They basically put a flimsy on the front page to say that this is now protecting the front cover of the book. So that's what the other team does. I don't have a copy with me. But all that happens is this front page gets a lamination strip. So it just protects the front page. So you have another group of people that physically do that. After they've done the lamination of the book, it then goes to a team that does the dispatching of the book. Now let's just quickly tell you about the changes in this one environment. There's approximately 80 staff. It's called the completion area. This 80 staff, basically, there was no monitoring, no controlling of what happens. We issue about 10,000 ID books a day. So that 10,000 would come into that section. You'd have people seated anywhere. You've got a checking group here, you've got a checking group there, you've got a cutting group there, cutting group. So there was no organization, nothing. So what happened, the turnaround time in that environment was anything between, 15 to 20 days that a book would take to go even in just in that environment before it even left to the dispatch section. And people were just happy. As long as the book was being done and sent out, nobody bothered to say, but you know what, we're working in such a haphazard way, let's get some system in place, get some controls in place. So what we did there was we changed everything completely. We formed cells. So we said, for us to produce 10,000 a day, each cell must do a minimum of 3,000. So we created 4 cells because we have to up the norm, because 10,000 was a bare minimum, because we had to keep up with what's coming in. We're getting 12,000 a day, but we're only producing 10,000 a day. So we're slowly building a backlog of 2,000 every day. So when do you even attend to that 2,000? So we had to up the production to at least 12,000 a day, being in line with what we're receiving a day, not to build a backlog. So we formed 3 cells. We said each cell must do a minimum of 3,000 a day. But that cell did beginning to end. That means they would get 3,000 in the morning, and you got your first lot of ladies. They are sitting basically in a position where they're sitting straight on the rows of desks are like this. So you have the first 4 ladies who will now check the 3,000. It will then move to the next ladies who do the cut and pasting of the 3,000. And then it will move to the other ones who does the final QA. But the problem is in our lamination, the skill of lamination, we only have about 6 people with that skill. Nobody wants to learn it. Nobody. They say it's just a job that they don't want to do. Because these 6 people are the only people that are willing to do it. You're working with laminating machines about this big at 120 degrees Celsius. So the books have to be actually placed into the machine and comes out on the other side with the lamination stuck to the front page. So nobody likes the job. So with the 6 people, we said we can't do anything in splitting them. So we then situated the laminating machines at the end of the three cells, or the 4 cells. So what would happen, all 4 cells work would go to a 1 lamination station. And there is somebody there who's controlling the books going through the laminate. So creating the cells brought a lot of control, and also brought the fact that I can't do less than a certain amount. I have to achieve my 3,000 for the day as a team. And they had to work as a team, because it wasn't a person being held responsible for 3,000. It was a team being held. So if this guy was late, this guy would scream, guys, it's late. We're only 2,500. Where's my other 500? The other 500 is coming. So we said, okay, by 3 o'clock, I must have... You would have finished your 3,000. So because we've put in that team effort of making sure 3,000, it helped a lot. It helped a lot. So that made a huge, huge difference in terms of the way the work flowed. So can we stop? I just want to phone Martin and just...
Let's keep going
okay.
where we left off.
Where we left off. Okay, and then we're looking at that creation of the cells, and there's more control in the work. We knew what was coming in, what was going on. We put in track and trace to say, you guys, if you track in the work that morning, that says you've now received the work in the morning, you are given, we gave them 8 days. We said we are given between 5 and 8 days to have the book completed, and the book must leave your section to go to another section. And that really brought a lot of control. And you know, that's one of my sections at that point in time when we entered the section was also very union dominated. But what helped a lot was that we got them involved in the process. We said, you know what, look at the way you guys are working now. I mean, it's a very secure environment. You have security outside the building, directly outside the office, who does physical body searches before you even leave. So we said, if you look at all of that in the work you're doing an important work. But for you, it's, so what if the book takes 5 days more or 10 days more? But there's a client out there. So we got them to understand that part, to say, you know what, there's somebody out there. It could be your mother, it could be your brother, it could be a sister who's waiting for a book. But the longer we took, the more. And if you look at media clips between 2007, 2000, we were in the media every day for poor service delivery, not doing this. So we were in the media quite often. So that helped. So the creation of the cells, ops management, hand-holding. We actually sent, we had two consultants. We said, you sit on that floor, because what used to happen, we sit on the fifth floor. So you only went there maybe 3 times a day if you were lucky because you were busy. We said, no, the consultant actually moved down, sat with the staff, so the staff could see the consultants there. So if they had a problem with the process we had changed, immediately they could bring up the problem and say, you know what, this is not working, Andrew. Josh, this is the problem here. Josh, let's help here. So that helped a lot with having the consultants sit with them so that they could see that, you know what, it's someone who's willing to work with us, not just come and implement a new process, but they just ignore the new process thereafter and say, you know what, here, you do it. But we handheld them through the entire process. It worked fantastic. I mean, at the moment, if I have my full staff, I can push up to 14,000 out, which is excellent. But I mean, in the civil service, absenteeism is a huge challenge. So it's a huge, huge problem. I mean, I have under me 244 staff. And each section has between 13 to 18% absenteeism rate on a daily basis. So it's a huge, huge thing. And you know, in the public service in South Africa, we've been given 36 days sick leave for over a 3-year cycle, all right? Then you're given 22 days vacation leave over a 1-year period. Then you're given 5 days, they call it compassionate leave. That means if one of your family members is sick and what have you, you've got 5 days that you can take in a year. You get another 5 days if someone in your family is deceased. Then you get another 5. So what happens, you'll find that a lot of staff, instead of using 12 days vacation leave, sick leave a year, they would finish all 36 days in 1 year. Then you've got study leave. Because we give a bursary if your studies are related to civics, to your line of work, or even if the public sector. So we give you study leave. So you must know, with your study leave, every exam you write, we give you 4 days. So you find that most universities, I'm not sure overseas, but in South Africa, they've now gone into a semester. So that means I can enroll for 2 subjects a semester or 3 subjects a semester. So what happens? For every subject I write, I get 4 days. So if I've got 3 days, I've got another 12 days. So you have people that want to study. You can't stop people from studying. Then you've got the sick leave, the vacation leave, and all the others. So you'll find that in a week, a section will suffer a lot in terms of leave. You'd find you'll have this team will have normally 10 people. You'll have 5 of them, 2 on study, 1 on vacation, 1 on sick. And the manager says, Yogi, how do I achieve my norm when I have that high? So absenteeism is a huge thing. You have the valid absenteeism, and you have the one that just abuse leave. And you'll find as well as closer to payday, on payday, the day after payday, you'll have a huge absenteeism in the building, because you'll find that I want to pay my accounts, I've got this to do, that to do. So, and unfortunately, maybe I shouldn't say it, maybe it shouldn't be documented, but you can't fire someone very easily in the civil service. You can't. Because you've got to really go through a stringent process of disciplinary action before the person can even be fired. So, and by the time you go through that stringent process of disciplinary action, that person will probably pull up his socks after 6 months or 9 months, and what do you do then? You have to forget everything that happened 9 months ago because the guy's decided he's pull up his socks. He'll pull up his socks for maybe 6 months. He'll go back all over again. But then when he starts all over again and you want to take disciplinary action, you can't go back in history and say, but you know what, 2 years ago you gave me a hard time and you're giving me a hard time now, and I can hold that against you. Can't. Because whatever happened after 6 months, you can't hold that person liable for it. So completion area, you understand, that's the processes we've changed there. We've reduced the times. We've done a lot of changes there in terms of cells. Backlogs, when something of the past, they also had backlogs of over 60,000 books in the building that didn't even go through.
Have there been improvements in absenteeism rates?
It has. It really has, because what happened was there was an HR policy change that says when you finish your 36 days sick leave, you now go to temporary incapacity. Now, temporary incapacity is detailed. What happened there was that you had to now bring a doctor's note. So you had to go to a doctor, even if it was for a day, because our policy says if you're absent for 3 days or more, that's the only time you bring a doctor's note. If you're off for just a day, you don't bring it. So now it says even for 1 day, you had to bring a doctor's note. So you can't just decide, I have a headache this morning and stay at home and come tomorrow and say to us that, oh, my leave is finished and I want temporary. They won't give it to you. It'll be leave without pay. HR has improved a lot, because in 2009, they did a full audit of our staff and where people were abusing leave. And people got a surprise this year in January. They ended up with less salary. Some of them had thousands of rands deducted. It's because over the years, they've been abusing their leave, but audits were never done. So now, it kind of pulled up their socks now in February this year to say, you know what, we've got to now control how we take our leave, because at the end of the year when they're doing audit, we're just losing money. In fact, there's a meeting at 1 o'clock today to say to people, this is the reason why the money was taken. You've been abusing your leave. So there's been a huge improvement in the absenteeism. But
What were the rates? You said the rates now are 13 to 18%.
They were between 30 to 35% absenteeism at that time, and it's really improved now. I mean, there's certain sections where there's close to about 8%. It's dropped to as low as 8% absenteeism. But even that 8% is actually leave that the person is entitled to, because if he's studying, you can't stop him from going on leave or writing his exams. That's leave that's actually that he has to take.
And how do you explain this, the big improvement? Apart from the HR policy change?
Overtime, getting things done in terms of the process changed, backlogs were experienced, we started working overtime, and the staff, we set in a policy to say that you're not allowed to work overtime if your absenteeism is bad. Overtime means more money. So everyone wants more money. But what we did was we put in internal policies to say that if you want to work overtime and there is overtime available, your absenteeism rate has to be good. That means you have to show us that you are a person who dedicated in home affairs, you love your work, you enjoy your work, and because of that, then we will give you a word to work overtime. And also, the change in the process has helped a lot. Because what happened, they found that it's no longer my mundane way of working. There's a new way of working. And some of them, if they were off for 2-3 days, and if processes changed, when they came back, they felt left out. Things have changed. I wasn't here. Now I'm so worried if they change again, they might move me. Or they might say, you know what, I don't need you in this section. They might move me to a section where I don't like. So that kind of, it played a various small factors played a role in terms of improving the absenteeism. But we hope that as we go forward, that there are more changes coming in terms of HR policies, and that probably will make people realize. Because I think in South Africa, probably being a developing country, you can't fire me. So I can probably do anything I want to do. It'll take you forever to... My job is basically secure. So that kind of mentality that needs to change, you would say that after a certain period, and our disciplinary policies in the department needs to change, really, because it should say that after I've done 1, 2, and 3, I must be able to suspend you or to release you from your job and say you're incompetent. No, we haven't fired anybody for incompetency in the department. The only one you got fired or suspended was because you
were caught for fraud or you were caught stealing something. So incompetency, where a person was just lazy or a person doesn't show up for work, he comes to work but not regularly. We haven't done that as a department. That's what we need to improve. But I believe we've got a new DDG in HR, and she's coming from outside background, so we believe that she's going to make a lot of changes in terms of HR. We've heard already, we've seen some circulars already that she wants to do a lot of changes in terms.
Okay, so we've covered the completion area in terms of everything that we've done there. The book now goes into another area, which is called our dispatch area. They actually physically dispatch the books to the outside office. Now, the old system of working, I think you would have seen it on the video, where they physically threw ID books into little cubicles. So they had this huge shelf with little cubicles with alphabets, not even office names, it was alphabets. So they would then, crates of 10,000 books would come into the section. They would, previously there was no track and trace, so they would receive it. They would then take it and physically throw it into little hockeys, like a factory, that had alphabets on it. So all the A's, all the B's and things. Then they would then take all the A's, and three people would sit on a desk and now physically go through each book and say, okay, now put it in strictly alphabetical order. Then they had to take it into office order to say which office was it. So it was a huge, huge mundane process of working. So when we went into that environment, the first thing we did was we said no throwing of books. Okay, first we introduced track and trace. That means when they received that book that morning, the 10,000, it had to go on track and trace immediately to say, yes, it's in my section, ready for dispatch. So that track and trace was there. After they had tracked it in, we said no more throwing. We don't want to hear anything about throwing. So all we did was each person was given a crate of 800. They have about 23 staff. Each person was given a crate of 800. And we said, all you do is you take the 800. Previously, what used to happen, on the outside of the ID book, this address slip, this is your address that the book must go to. This address slip was on the inside of the plastic cover, and the book would go like this to the section. But what the section would do, little pieces of paper were stuck at the back with the office name. And when they're doing when I'm sitting with the 800, I would sort the office according to office name and put this office names. So what we did was we removed that and we said, this address slip must now come there. That was one. Then we changed. Previously, we had the applicant's postal address and the applicant's physical address. Now, with XPS using them as a single service courier service, we said books are no longer going to be sent to the client. The client must come and identify himself at a Home Affairs office and collect his book himself. So we now put the office name. So there's two things. So we took the address and we put the office name. We said, you know what, now it must go there. So now when they receive the 8,000, I don't have to worry about writing small pieces of paper. It's there already. It says District Office Uteneg. So it means District Office Uteneg is going to be here. So that kind of changed a lot of things by just doing that small change. It helped a lot, and it was easy for them to sort out. So after they did the sorting out, so we had one person with 800 books and they just did them. Then you had the other person that will go, you have a manager. He'll say, okay, I'm collecting Durban. So he'll go and pick up all the Durban from about 6 o'clock. He'll take all the Durban books and he'll bring it to a dispatch clerk. We then install a dispatch system. They never had a dispatch system. They would just put it into a bag and they would just send it to the outside office. And they would use the national population register to say ID book sent. So now we put a dispatch system to say, you've got 500 books that needs to go to Durban. The first thing you do is you will go on the dispatch system and you will scan all 500 IDs. It will then give you a printout to say these are the 500 IDs. You take that printout with the 500 IDs. You will double check that 500 matches the printout. Then we have XPS. We have XPS in-house. So I use XPS to bring me the application and I use XPS to deliver the ID book as well. So I have an in-house XPS team, which was never there before. So the XPS team now will also generate me a Weibo and an XPS bag for this office. So immediately, they are sitting in my office. They have their own machines. They will generate me a Weibo every morning. They would give me Weibos for the entire country. and they'll prepare my XPS bags. So when my clerk is ready, dispatch is done, the dispatch, it will now go directly right there in front of her. There's no taking it and putting it somewhere else or whatever. Into the XPS bag. XPS bag is sealed in presence of XPS and DHA official, put into a crate. So that kind of brought a bit more control to say what goes in the bag I can account for. There's two people signing the dispatch list to say, yes, we agree the content. At 3 o'clock every afternoon, XPS arrives in the building. They would then take my crates. But before they take my crates are sealed here with the seal. So should there be any robbery during the course of the way, XPS takes responsibility because I send the crate sealed. So they'll put all the bags in a sealed crate. XPS will take it to their hub and then deliver. The process we changed there as well is that at the outside office previously, they would just receive a bag of books, open the books, file it in the cabinet, and that was it. So now what we said, no, when you open the bag, you need to tally, does the dispatch list match the number of books that you have in the bag? Because a lot of books were going missing and being stolen. So we put in that control measure to say, you need to now open. So XPS going back is given 3 days. From the time they pick up the bag from me and from the time they deliver at the outside office, they can't just drop the bag and go. XPS must stand there. They must open the bag with the Home Affairs official, check the content, that the content is correct, sign off the dispatch list, and XPS must leave. My clerk must immediately put that ID book on track and trace to say, yes, ID book is at outside office. Simultaneous to that, we had the problem with the client. Previously, the offices will tell the client, come back after 6 months to collect your ID book. Client will come back, the book is not there. He'll come back 5 times, the book is not there. So then we implemented a SMS system, which is linked to the track and trace. So when the outside office tracks in the ID book to say the ID book is here, immediately an SMS is sent to the client to say your ID book is at the office ready for collection. So, and then we subsequently send 2 other SMSs as a reminder. The first one at the time of application, at the time of receipt of book, after 60 days, and then thereafter, after 110 days. So giving the client enough time or and reminders to say, come and collect your ID book is ready. So that saved a lot of time in terms of the book leaving my office and going back. By June 2008, we had already dropped out and around of the ID book from 127 days to 60 days. So we had already cut the time by more than half, and it was only just changing the process, changing how the way people work, and having them making them comply with the new way of working and the track and trace. The track and trace played a good role. By 2009, beginning of 2009, we call it a name and shame report. So what we were doing by middle of 2009, our daily reports became weekly reports. So on a weekly basis, we started rating the outside offices and the provinces. So the rating created quite a hype in all Home Affairs offices because I could see my name was bottom of the list and I would be picked out in management meetings or my province was doing. So we did a first, we did a provincial rating to say, XPS is at your office, they're picking up applications and they're bringing it to us. How long is it taking for you to scan it in and for you to give it to XPS? But that rating helped because you had the provincial managers, big guys, fighting with each other and fighting with the office saying, guys, we are number 7 on the list. We must be number 1 on the list. You know, DG is looking at this list as well. That helped a lot to get them to say, you know what, let's start turning the work on time. The same with the return of the ID books as well. When the books got back there, we said, which office was tracking it immediately on track and trace and filing it? So we did a rating. Then from provincial rating, we went to office rating. And then on our Thursday report, we actually put in the best 5 offices and the worst 5 offices as a covering to our email. So automatically that created a hype as well to say, boy, we are now the 5 worst offices in the country. So that helped a lot to create that, to say, you know what, guys, we need to pull up our socks. And that helped a lot to the outside office in terms of compliance. I think I've covered most of what we've done in terms of the turnaround, in terms of everything that we've achieved so far. And I think the buy-in of the staff, the working in together with management and consultants, and also, you know, My DDG, Mr. Mkhize, I'm not sure if you've already met him or interviewed him as yet, but you know, he's an excellent person. He gave us free rein. He didn't come down to say, you know what, everything you run by me first. He said, guys, you know what, y'all know what y'all doing. You give me feedback on what you've done. But you'll find that in other branches, the head wants to have a say in everything, and everything must be first run by them before you do. But he says, you know what, he trusted us a lot to say, I know what you guys want and I know what you want to do. You guys do it. So we used to have a once a week meeting with him and just give him an update, but we had his full support, and that helped a lot. You know, when you have your manager's support, it makes it so much easier for you to implement things that you want to implement. And then we got the support from the managers in the building, the lower levels as well. They all knew this is what. And I think the message went around, we're here to stay, we want to change, and we want to make things happen. So either you jump on the boat and you go with us, or if you feel you don't want to be part of the change, then you find another way out. You find a transfer, you want to transfer yourself, but we're here to help you. But you know what? Nobody transferred. Everybody jumped in and said, you know what? Yes, you had the ones with resistance. I mean, you still have them now. We come from an old school. We don't believe in change. Nothing will change. Everything will remain. But eventually, okay, that's the way you think, but this is the way I want you to work. So if I want you to work this way, I can't change the way you think, but I can change the way you work, because at the end of the day, there's a deliverable. There's a norm to reach. Now, we've set a norm of 150 a day. For you to reach 150, you have to follow the new process. You cannot follow your old process. So that is how we got them to eventually buy into the changes that we've made. I think I've covered most of it, David, unless there's something else that you want me to elaborate on or that you want me to give you more explanation on.
I think that's great. Thanks so much.
Sure.